Welcome everyone to another week here at the Damage Report. Not only another week though, another Monday, a fantastic Monday with our recurring Monday guest, Dan Evans. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me. Of course, can't replace Francesca at all, but happy to be here for a little bit.
Can't replace her, and yet for another week you have. Eventually, we're gonna have trouble remembering her name. That's my fear. No, I'm kidding. I know that
at least it rhymes.
Exactly, that's true. But anyway, no, she'll be back and she's doing quite well, which is awesome. But we're also glad to have you, equally awesome. As we were talking about before the show started, you're doing a bit of what we'll be talking about later, a little bit of overemployment, joining us when I hear tell that you have shows of your own.
Oh yes, overemployment to the max. There is Good Morning Bad News, which we'll be starting a podcast of very shortly, but follow us on TikTok, of course, for that. And then PowerPort Live, we're streaming every Thursdays up until the election. That is fun. And Audio Face, we just did bonus episodes on Arctic Monkeys and 1975, two really big music bands that came out. Music bands. That's what John calls them.
You sound like me.
But yeah, check all that out. Follow me on Twitter at Dan from the Web to catch all of those things.
Yeah, I did a recent podcast about football and other sports squads that the news of which I follow on the fields and grids. Anyway, yes, definitely do that. And you know, it is an exciting time. Normally, I would wait a little bit longer to announce this, but this is a big week, not only for the news but also for Nina Turner. Unbossed is finally fully armed and operational, and it will be firing at Yavin 4 a little bit later on today, and you can watch live. Cenk Uygur is gonna be joining Nina Turner. You can go to youtube.com/unbossedtyt so you can subscribe and get notifications for that. And I will be joining Nina tomorrow, so everyone better tune in, okay? I'll be scared and alone if you're not there. So you better tune in. It's gonna be awesome. But anyway, with that said, there's a lot that we're gonna be talking about today. Just deeply embarrassing news about America, our culture, our politics, that just makes you not want it to be the country we live in. But we're gonna be engaging with it, so get ready for that. And in advance of that, please hit the like button and share the stream so that people know we're live. With that said, Dan, are you ready to start this thing?
Yes, once people hit the like button and share the stream, I'm waiting, do it. I'm waiting for you.
I'm watching.
Right there, do it.
I'm watching.
Good, appreciate that.
They did it. Okay, let's jump into it.
One thing I have not done, I've never pretended to be a police officer. And I've never threatened a shootout with the police.
Well, and now I have to respond to that.
We are moving on, gentlemen.
I have to respond to that. And you know what's so funny? I am with many police officers. And at the same time,
Mr. Walker, excuse me.
When he say a problem with the truth, the truth is
I need to let you know, Mr. Walker, you are very well aware of the rules tonight.
Yes.
And you have a prop.
Yes.
That is not allowed, sir. Yes. I ask you to put that prop away.
Well, it's not a prop. This is real. And he said I have a problem. I never worked with law enforcement.
It is considered a prop, Mr. Walker.
Yes.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes.
You're very well aware of the rules. Aren't you?
Well,
aren't you aware of the rules?
He brought up the truth. Well, let's talk about the truth.
Thank you for putting that prop away.
Ooh, man, when the moderator's gonna talk to you like you're a tiny little boy who's been acting really naughty, that's not a good sign for your candidacy when you want to be a United States senator. So that is Herschel Walker, who we've already known for many months has been knowingly telling lies about being a cop or being an FBI agent. And there we're just focusing on that particular sort of lies. There's all sorts of insane lies that he's told about his past. And he decided, no, I'm gonna double down on it. And I'm gonna whip out a fake little badge that they give to people as like, hey, thanks for being with us cops or whatever. Take this thing and put it on your mantle or something. And he brings it to a debate because he thinks it makes him a cop. I've got a replica of Captain America's shield in my garage. Now, yes, it is made out of plastic, but if I hold it up on a debate stage, am I a super soldier? Is that how America works? This is so deeply embarrassing. He should have come to the debate prepared to reassure people that while he has had many missteps with the truth in the past, he can still do the job of being a senator. And instead, he decided, no, I'm going to tell more lies, except now I'm gonna do show and tell at the same time. Dan, what do you think?
It was one of my favorite moments of the debate. It got really heated in certain moments, and at least this was a debate that Herschel Walker attended. But yeah, the moment that he actually brought out the prop badge, I was thinking, how many people have actually tried to get hired off of their honorary degrees they've gotten from colleges? Because sometimes you get to speak and they'll give you an honorary degree for whatever. Like, how many people try to leave tips and bus tokens or whatever? Like, it's of that line. But what you're saying there, John, is something we unfortunately know about the Republican Party, which is that we're looking at how Herschel Walker will double down and continually lie. Republican voters might be looking at Herschel Walker and going, yeah, look at him. He's not bending down to the media. He's not bending down to that Democrat or whatever. He's going to be a reliable Republican voter, because there are a lot of Republican voters who don't really care about that morality aspect, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're totally right. That's definitely an explanation. An alternative explanation potentially is, you might recall that he at one point, I think it was, he said he wouldn't be able to do the Sunday night debate because he's busy on Thursdays or something like that. It made no sense, but he clearly doesn't understand how days and dates work. Is it possible that he thought that was Halloween? And that's just like, you know, like sometimes kids will dress up like the thing they want to be when they grow up. Maybe that's what Herschel Walker was doing. I don't know. But anyway, as Brooke says in the chat, that is how America works. And it is. We're showing you this video. It is deeply embarrassing. It is, if to the extent that you have empathy for people who are clearly going through a lot of trouble mentally, it's troubling. It's distressing in that way. And then layered on top of that is the umbrella of, this will have no effect whatsoever on Republican voters, because why would it and how could it? Like, considering all of they have been cramming his lies and insanity and incompetence down their maw for months and months and months. One little added after dinner mint of him whipping out, as people say, a Paw Patrol badge. Like, how is that gonna, they've already accepted that in their view, he hired a hitman to commit a murder of a baby, and they're fine with that. So once they're fine with that, how's the badge thing possibly gonna get through? And honestly, to some extent, we're wasting our time, not just in a general sense, but in a very specific sense. Every single time we try to get through to these people to convince them that this is not a guy who can do the job, a job that is important and complicated, because at the end of the day, it isn't just that they don't care about him. They don't want competent people in government. They don't believe that government needs to or should function. And so they have no problem putting people in there who are just gonna be buffoonish placeholders. They're fine with that, because he will deliver to them the only thing that they do want, which is telling insane lies about the trans community, trying to, in a general sense, own the libs, whatever. That is the only export the government is supposed to produce. And while Herschel Walker is working with 1.5 neurons, he can at least do that.
Like, totally. And you even think about the Republican strategy of, let's look at another candidate, Dr. Oz. We don't really care about this person, how they could represent a state, how Dr. Oz is the carpetbagger for Pennsylvania, right? We just want a reliable Republican vote. That's all we care about. We just want vessels for votes. And that's why it's important to highlight why the Democrats and Republicans, I hate both parties pretty extremely, but they're playing two different sets of politics. Republicans are playing a winner take all sort of strategy game where they just want reliable vessels for votes. Democrats, at least some of them, pretend to believe that, oh, we want people who uphold values and principles, and if they're unbecoming of the office, we want them to step down because we're supposed to be better than the other side. But again, they're fighting war. Democrats are playing checkers. It's maddening.
Yeah, no, 100%. You're totally right. The nature of the fight, that it's winner take all. And I will also just very briefly, I'm not gonna waste a bunch of time, but I'm gonna remind people that never allow anyone to have you think that what politics is this side and this side, and they're gonna fight, okay? And then that's gonna determine what happened. That is not the situation. The people, the economic powers they represent already are in control. Okay, this is the empire versus the rebellion. This is not equal forces determining the future. The future is set as of right now. We're trying to change the future. And anything that they can do that slows it down, that obfuscates things, that wastes time, that provides roadblocks, that is continued rule for them. that is not us not being able to accomplish what we want and they can't accomplish what they want. And man, it's just gridlock and nothing gets done. Nothing being done is everything they want done. And please never forget that. With that said, Herschel Walker took a little bit of time out from his little badge prop stunt and eventually had to answer some questions about this. What the hell is going on and are you all right? And here is his response.
Where's this one from?
This is from my hometown. This is from Johnson County, from the sheriff from Johnson County, which is a legit badge. Everyone can make fun, but this badge, give me the right. Let me finish. If anything happened in this county, I have the right to work with the police and getting things done.
Does that have arresting authority or it's an honorary badge?
It is an honorary badge, but they can call me whenever they want me and I have the authority to do things for them, to work with them on things.
The National Sheriff's Association said an honorary badge, quote, is for the trophy case. Why make the decision
That is totally not true.
That's totally true. Every fact that she said that she had already prepared, because she is an intelligent person with some grasp on reality, which is why when he held up the badge again and said his little thing about him being a real cop, she gave him that look, that condescending but totally understanding and understandable look. He's insane. He's out of his mind. I mean, he does get our politics and how nothing matters, and so he understands the only really important things, but he's not a cop. We know that he's not a cop. Everybody knows that he's not a cop, and he's continuing to say it. Dan, this feel like so I'm white, okay? I've been around a lot of racists in my life. I understand racists and how they think. And this whole thing just feels to me like, I know that racists are so getting off on this. They're loving every word out of his mouth, every stunt that he does. This is everything that they want playing out. And it just makes me feel so sick every time a new episode of this disgusting show comes out. What do you think?
I think that's a really good point. It's really interesting there because you see in a lot of cases where the Republican Party will happily take people who are willingly or just happen to hit the trajectory to where they can be used for their, let me fix that, it should be weaponized for their identities to further the Republican Party ideology. You take people like Candace Owens or Kanye West, almost put them together again, but let's make this close to home. Let's take Dave Rubin, and we've seen that sad example, right? He willingly let himself be used as a gay former liberal and saying, I'm leaving the left, all these things are bad, I'm talking down to them. It's playing right into what they want to believe. Herschel Walker, it's darker because there are a lot of voters who I think maybe just see, again, this is just going to be an empty vessel for votes. But the point you're saying earlier about his lack of grasp on reality, in the same two or three sentences, he's essentially saying that the same authority figures that gave him the honorary badge and could call him up at any moment to say that badge allows him to be a police officer, like a full police officer, also said two sentences later that those same authorities don't have that ability to say what it is or not, because that journalist responded and said, yep, hey, that badge is a trophy case. So it's detachment from reality warped in racism that racists will love and say, hey, look, that's a dumb black person that'll work for us. When in reality, this is exploitation. It's probably racial exploitation on the Republican Party, but it's definitely mental health exploitation. And that is, I think, yeah, it's easy on the left for us to make fun of the Herschel Walker situation and go, haha, look at Republican who's doing a dumb thing. And you know, we should, because this is reality and it should be fair. But this is also just like the Ye story is. This is exploitation. This is taking someone in a weak mental state and going, this would be a nice figurehead for us because this person can say the things we want to say but can't. Yeah. And that's just, it's disgusting, like you're saying. It's a really dark turn in American politics.
You're 100% right. It's why for some time I didn't like even covering this race, because I felt like to just give my honest opinion about what he's doing and what he's saying, it makes me feel disgusting to do it. And like we were covering a story, I think, on Indisputable, and Rashad told me like you can't feel that way. And the way he worded it was, no, he's just a dumbass, and you need to point out that he's a dumbass. But it did feel, it all feels so manufactured. Like I can see the racist plot and every bit of it, and I hate it. I hate the exploitation of the, as you say, it's not just the exploitation of like a willing black conservative, but if somebody with mental health problems, and this isn't even the only case of this going on this week. So I don't like what seems to be a trend of this. It feels so deeply nasty.
And we know Republicans are not above using figureheads. I mean, like we saw what they did in the AOC primary. There's a one time where they're trying to primary AOC with a Latina woman who was like further left, but they tried to, you know, appeal in certain ways that are extremely condescending to other demographics. Hell, I've known people who were like black conservatives who were also former football players who were picked by the Republican Party. They're like, we're gonna pair you with certain other black political figures in the Republican Party, and we're gonna have you run elections because this is a deliberate strategy. Now, yeah, it often doesn't get as ugly and exploitative as it looks right now, but it is always ugly and exploitative. Let's make clear about that. I still do think it's important to talk about it because, I mean, it's ugly and exploitative, but it's the chess piece, the pawn, unfortunately, to use that phrase, the Republicans are putting forward in this race. And this is a real race where people are actually going to be represented. And if Herschel Walker gets elected, Georgia is going to like face, I worry, irreparable damage.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you, it's within a few points. So this is going to be one of those races that I know both of us that night, we're just going to be clicking refresh and just hoping that against all hope, something good or even just something rational happens. That said, let's go into this next video. Let's look at other people having to defend this nonsense.
The cop that he had, that badge with
yeah,
the honorary badge,
I couldn't make it out. I don't know what it was. I believe it was a police badge, but I couldn't. I couldn't see it from where I was, so I really don't know.
Did you find out you said it was this, the county one?
Well, again, I couldn't see it from where I was, so I can't really speak to what it was.
So what should you call it, the problem? Or his badge?
I don't know because I couldn't see it. I heard the woman ask him to put it away, and he put it away, but I couldn't see what it was.
Okay, so that is a conservative strategist Ralph Reed being asked almost immediately after the first Warnock-Walker debate, why is the candidate that you support holding up a fake police badge, an honorary prop? Why is he acting as if he's a cop? And what you got to see was not a unique thing. Politicians do this all the time. They did it for years while Trump was president about literally anything he tweeted. I didn't see it. I didn't read it. I can't say anything about it. And that never really makes any sense when it comes to a Trump tweet because, yeah, you did, you liar, you saw it. Or if not, I can read it to you right now. But it's what, 5 times dumber in this instance? It was a badge. You saw that it was a badge. And if maybe your long distance vision isn't that great, we're telling you it was a badge. You know that it was a badge. He said it was a badge when he held it up. I didn't see it. I didn't know. There was something in my eye, the sun. I couldn't really, there was a palm frond that was just moving in front of my eyes. What a deeply embarrassing position for a conservative strategist to be. Like that guy is there because he believes he's got it all locked down. He understands all of this stuff. He knows how the conservatives should take power. And he's honestly not even that wrong. They're choosing the sort of figurehead, the sort of puppet that they want in this race to do the buffoonish stuff that he refuses to answer for. But along the way, it is gonna look deeply embarrassing for him to pretend that he's the only person in America that didn't see what happened at that debate. Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit it was a little bit hard to make out on TV exactly what it was. But again, you have journalists telling you what it was. At the end of the day, you are up there as a surrogate for Herschel Walker and the Republican Party. Like, listen, the truth is you are a spin doctor. That's pretty much what that was. That was post-debate after debates. When you're there in person, you have spin rooms where the debates, the politician, their surrogates are trying to talk to the press and they're trying to get their side of the story out as quickly as they can so that they can set the narrative for the debate. if your narrative for the debate was be responding to the question of, hey, your candidate did something really dumb and really embarrassed themselves and a series of embarrassments this entire campaign will be, what's your response? And your response as a paid surrogate for that campaign is, I don't know what that is and I've never seen that. And I'm gonna continue like I can't even pivot quickly enough off of that. You're bad at your job and you have a bad candidate. Like, yeah. That's all that says to me as a viewer, even if I'm being like objective about it.
Well, they definitely have a bad candidate. I would say he could have done that with a little bit more charisma or something, but they do get their movement. That's what they want. They want Herschel Walker's. And then I will close by saying, in the same way that leading into these midterms, I've said so many times, I don't like Lauren Boebert and I don't like Marjorie Greene. But one of the things that I like least about them is who they're going to inspire to run. Because they are demonstrating to a nation that all of the things that you might have once believed need to be true for a person to become a congressperson are not actually true. You do not have to have accomplishments or intelligence or grace or even a husband who hasn't wagged his ding dong at little girls. You don't have to have any of those things. You can just run. You can just be the crazy Facebook mom who posts about QAnon and stuff. And you too can become a congressperson. And that is true. We have way crazier people than them running in the cycle. And in the same way, who is Herschel Walker inspiring right now? Not just the candidates, but the strategists. What athletes or washed up movie stars or whatever are they going to put in a suit and prop up against a podium? And that's going to be their next person that's running for Senate. I don't know. But I know that in 2024, we're going to find out. There are going to be some insane candidates. Everyone needs to buckle up. Anyway, okay, time to launch into some insanity, everyone. If you're joining us late, feel free to hit the like button as we launch into more stories. But it's time for that. So we just came out of the weekend and we have to grapple with some truly insane anti-Semitism. Here is your Monday Menace. No, it's not Kanye West, although we'll get to him. No, this one's for Trump because his was more pure, more undiluted. He decided to bleat on Truth Social in response to nothing that anyone can figure out. He just decided to send this one day. No president has done more for Israel than I have. Somewhat surprisingly, however, our wonderful evangelicals are far more appreciative of this than the people of the Jewish faith, especially those living in the US. Those living in Israel, though, are a different story. Highest approval ratings in the world could easily be PM. US Jews have to get their act together and appreciate what they have in Israel before it is too late. So, talking about how people of the Jewish faith living in America should be grateful to him for something that he did that he won't define. And that because they're not grateful to him, they're being disloyal is already super disgusting and playing into some of the most deep-seated anti-Semitic tropes. The ideas of loyalty and how you're supposed to feel this attachment to either, I guess, Trump now, but generally he's saying you should feel an attachment to Israel. And whatever happens in Israel, you have some sort of obligation to feel the same way, which is insane. All of that would be bad. But to then throw on at the end, before it is too late, which I don't know, feels a little bit like a threat to me. And again, all of this was in response to nothing that anyone can identify. I don't know, like Ilhan Omar is an anti-Semite, I guess, because she said the Benjamins thing. So let's not focus on this, I guess, which the right doesn't have a problem with. Fox News is not leading with this. They're perfectly fine with what he had to say about the loyalty of American Jewish people.
This is a common point by certain right-wing Jewish people. Like, I'll never think about, I always remember Ben Shapiro being interviewed by the BBC where he was being pointed on this, how he was being challenged on, well, wait, what right do you, Ben Shapiro, have to speak for all Jews in the United States, especially when like there are more progressive Jews, like politically progressive Jews in the United States, than there are conservative Jews such as Ben Shapiro. So it's really weird for him to not only just say that he speaks for all Jewish people, but he will do this thing where he says, okay, these are like the good Jewish people, and then these are people who are like not Jewish enough based on nothing but their political affiliations. And it's ridiculous. And we have a current graphic, if the technical director could get it off, of the next tweet from Jonathan Greenblatt, who says how we don't need the former president who curries favor with extremists and anti-Semites to lecture us about the US-Israel relationship. It's not about quid pro quo. It rests on shared values and security interests. This Jew-splaining is insulting and disgusting. I'm glad he used that phrase, because like black-splaining, brown-splaining, it's this thing where you start to speak for another culture, another culture's relationship. Now, yeah, I think the US-Israel relationship is very complicated, and I'd like to see that relationship have more consideration for the lives of Palestinians who live in an essentially open-air prison. But I think that is like, for Donald Trump to come in here and say, oh, you better watch out, I'm basically could be the king of the Jews, more or less. Like, he is way overstepping his boundaries. And it's not surprising, because I mean, Ye is getting a lot of attention, and all of the big attention grabbers in politics and in media right now are going, okay, can I touch that? How much of that can I touch to also get this attention for myself? And Trump's doing it as well. It's disgusting.
I was actually wondering about that. Do you think that there's like a direct connection there? Is this him, like Kanye West is telling the nation that he wants to be, I guess, the most prominent anti-Semitic conservative? Is this Trump feeling like he's being like boxed out and he needs to reassure them in this random message that again has no relationship to anything? Like, is this his attempt to reassure anti-Semites that he's got their back? Why do it now?
Yeah, nothing about Trump is necessarily random. It might feel random because it's poorly thought through and poorly executed. But no, Trump is extremely terminally online. And of course, he's paying attention to what Ye is doing, because I mean, Ye and Trump at one point were surrogates. In fact, we know, like on record now, there's a call that Trump had right after the Tucker Carlson interview when all this started, where Trump was like, this guy might be going a little bit too far in this whole thing. I think he really needs to tap the brakes here. That's kind of like what he was saying there. Of course, we've had situations where Trump or people in the Trump orbit will at 1 minute go, oh wow, this is extreme. And then like 15 minutes later go, oh, but this might actually be red meat for our base. And so they try it. They realize that the Republican Party writ large will look at that and go, oh, well, that's a little bit disgusting, but we're all cheerleaders for the team, so we're gonna apologize for you anyways, thus giving them more wiggle room for this anti-Semitism. So it's a vicious cycle on the Republican Party that they don't seem willing to solve, because it might cost them racist votes. I encourage rational people out there to just think about that, what that means for the country.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I would just like to see, okay, so the right is perfectly fine with this. They're okay. We don't have this graphic, but Newsmax actually at least is talking about this with a lower third that says Trump Jews comment draws backlash. So what's with the passive lower third? If it was Ilhan Omar, do you think they'd be saying Ilhan Omar's comment draws backlash? We report on the conversation that's over there. We have no thoughts about it. We're not going to opine on it. Why all of a sudden are you so hands off? Because they don't actually care. And that's fine. Like, if you like anti-Semites, if that's what you want, and we know that for many of the right it is, then just stop pretending, okay? If for no other reason that it's going to make Ben Shapiro really uncomfortable, and I would love to see it.
Last like 30-second example, right? Because on the left, you have an example of this kind of recently. In LA, you had a bunch of city council people who were caught on tape saying racist things against black people and Latino people. There wasn't this thing, largely like it was mixing in that relationship, but like there wasn't this thing on the left where people were like, oh, well, this is racism and it's bad, but we have some racist voters and maybe we can like tip this aside and treat this differently from racism we see on the Republican Party. No, there are people protesting outside of the remaining council member who hasn't resigned yet out of his house as they speak for the past like several days now. So this is not something that the left does. This is something where the right is like, oh, we have terrible people on our side, let's protect them for votes. It just shows why this is asymmetric politics that we're dealing with right now. We're not fighting the same battle. The Democrats need to realize this and not stoop down to their level, but understand this strategically.
Yeah. And as you're pointing out, she was actually forced out. there were actual consequences. On the right, I mean, come on, that's just not gonna happen.
I watched the George Floyd documentary that Candace Owens put up. One of the things that his two roommates said was, they want a tall guy like me. They want a tall guy like me. And the day when he died, he said a prayer for, you know, 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. He said a prayer for 8 minutes. They hit him with the fentanyl. If you look, the guy's knee wasn't even on his neck like that. When he said mama, mama is his girlfriend. They said he screamed for his mama. Mama was his girlfriend. It's in the documentary.
I want to be careful with this subject because...
Wait a second, but tell me, mm-hmm. could you even really run this interview? Because Mav didn't run my interview.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They blocked me out. The Jewish media blocked me out. This right? I'm lit, right? I'm lit. Yeah. I'm lit. You're...
Okay. So they did run at least part of the interview, I guess. And I love him pointing out the difficulty in having some of his other interviews being run. And then seemingly wanting to demonstrate why the trouble existed by immediately beginning to talk about the Jewish media and their control of seemingly everything. And we'll talk about that part. But the bulk of the comment was that Kanye West is now in a position in his life where he just believes about the world anything he hears Candace Owens say. Or I guess Tucker Carlson, who tells very similar lies about George Floyd and the nature of his death. Just to clarify for people who might not have been tracking this tragedy, during the trial against Derek Chauvin, who killed George Floyd, medical experts testified that even though Floyd did have traces of fentanyl in his system, Floyd died from a lack of oxygen caused by the knee on his neck, which a coroner's report affirmed in deeming Floyd's death a homicide. But what would they know? They're only the coroner and medical experts. I mean, they don't have the sort of expertise on the topic that one Candace Owens would have. And so Kanye West is taking whatever remaining cultural power and influence he has to try to convince people to believe fraudulent right-wing narratives about the death of George Floyd.
And the fraudulent right-wing narratives, but I remember when we were covering this stuff during that trial, it was some of the most disgusting things that I've seen right-wing media say, because they're like, oh wow, this is bad, but we have to somehow speak out against this. And so Tucker Carlson, all these other right-wing figures, we're openly taking talking points that were being used on far extreme right wing hate sites like Stormfront, like other ones I don't even want to mention, like the Chans, etc. And so it's not, I tweeted this earlier over the weekend when I saw this Drink Champs clip, like other than race, and as other people pointed out, like, you know, class, what is the difference ideologically speaking between Ye and like the average Stormfront user? Because this whole, oh, the Jews control the media and George Floyd wasn't actually killed, it was drugs and black people are all dangerous like this and white lives actually matter. Like, this is no different from Kanye's, like, is Kanye this close from saying, I actually regret the fact that I am black and I had children because white people are being replaced and I need to just make sure that I never have children. Like, he's almost that close to saying that, because everything else he is mirroring is white great replacement theory. The stuff that Steve Bannon is trying to push as right wing fascism across the world. Like, this is serious stuff, all right? And the worst thing I hate about this is that it's being wrapped in this message, which we all should have, of, you know, media gatekeepers and like being able to express ourselves freely. Like, these are things we all care about. TYT exists because there are media gatekeepers within the Democratic Party. But there's a difference between keeping power in control for, you know, your own worthiness or values, like the Democratic Party does, versus going into anti-Semitic tropes that have existed for decades and centuries, which is what Kanye West is muddying the waters with personally. And so this is, the last thing I'll say is that the Ye stuff is particularly frustrating, because most of the time political people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, I've got news for you, thankfully or not, no one outside of political spaces actually knows who Marjorie Taylor Greene is. She's just a regular political figure, right? So if you're not already watching politics all the time, thankfully, she's not in your world or business. But Ye is saying all this stuff to people who don't pay attention to politics, who might be susceptible to for falling for this nonsense and actually believing it. That's when it gets dangerous, because that's the real world society out there who already has this distrust of media. And so I've always said enough, but like this is so dangerous.
Yeah, and look, I don't know the politics, if there are any, of the hosts of that show, but that's why you should theoretically be ready to rebut some of this stuff. I mean, I don't know that they could have been expected to know that he was gonna randomly start talking about George Floyd, but I feel like you gotta come back the next day and be like, well, here are actually the facts that came out in the case. But we'll see, maybe some of those facts will once again be legislated nationally, because Lee Merritt, you know, who's a lawyer working with the family, the Floyd family, says they are looking at the possibility of some sort of lawsuit, considering that, yes, you cannot defame the dead, but he is spreading complete misinformation, consequential misinformation. It seems like a difficult case to be made, but you can expect that there will be more coverage of this as a result of that. Anyway, with that said, why don't we jump very briefly into this?
My question is, will you accept the results of your election in November?
I'm gonna win the election and I will accept that result.
If you lose, will you accept that?
I'm gonna win the election and I will accept that result.
Okay, so it goes on like that for quite a while. And let me answer for Carrie Lake. She is going to say that it was stolen from her if she lied. I mean, that's the most obvious thing in the world, okay? Like, by the way, still a good job by the reporter to keep asking. You can't twist her arm. You can't make her come out and say it. The only thing I guess you can do is keep asking and make a moment out of it. But the reason we wanted to play this clip of Carrie Lake is one, we don't talk enough about this race, and it's a race that Carrie Lake looks like she has a good chance of winning. You can see in the most recent aggregate of polling that she's currently up by almost a point over Katie Hobbs. But also, while there are so many things going on in America that we have to track, we care about the war against the trans community, we care about people's ability to determine what happens to their own bodies, and we care about a lot of different things. The backdrop of all that is we are almost certainly going to head into December with a lot more people in elected office that have no interest whatsoever in democracy. And hopefully some of them will be stopped from getting in those positions, but there are gonna be more election deniers and automatic believers in fraud, even in Republican primaries, once we get through this election. She's one of the most prominent ones. I don't know if it makes you feel any better or worse about the situation, in that this is clearly a performance she's putting on. Just a couple of years ago, she didn't like Trump, she wasn't interested in any of this. That personally to me seems worse, not better. But understand that yes, there are gonna be a lot of people that are gonna be waiting to use their newfound positions of power to help people like Donald Trump the next time he loses an election and would like to win instead. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, let's be very clear what this is. They are deciding that we're going to just be sore losers, which is to say that if they win, they will accept the results. If they lose, which we have tested every single election, there is negligible, virtually no voter fraud, like 34 or something like that. I'm not gonna say like the exact numbers, right? But it's virtually no voter fraud every single election they do. So they're gonna say the Republican strategy is either we accept results when we win, or if we lose, we deny them. We never go, hey, you know what? We won this election, but it's very close and we feel like there was some tampering going on by even our side. So, you know, we want a good faith recount to make sure that, you know, we care about election integrity here. Republicans, the party of election integrity. That's what they're honestly trying to say. But in reality, they're not saying, hey, look, there's a Republican here who looks like they might have won when they shouldn't have. They're only saying that any Democrat winning is an illegitimate election. And they're going they're going far enough to say that in practice, but like many political things, it seems like a lot of society is just gonna go, okay, well, that's one side and the Democrats have another side. And you know, they'll come in the middle and we'll have no one will be happy kind of compromise thing, this compromise dogma that we have. But no, this is it. This is what breaks the democracy. We all talk about being like in a point where we're at the end of an empire. That's the last domino. If one party decides that, okay, the only elections that are legitimate are the ones where we win, that's the dictatorship. That's it. And I'm gonna tell you, you might think that, oh, this is a low tax dictatorship where I get to carry my gun around all the time and I get to choose from 40 different kinds of cereal in the aisles. Dictatorships are not fun for people who are not the dictators or the dictators' families. And so George Carlin said it, it's a big club, you ain't in it no matter how much you think you are. So we should be worried about this.
We should. Another one we're gonna be watching like hawks on election day. Okay, with that, we're gonna take our second break of the hour. When we come back, we're gonna give you an update on what's going on in Ukraine after this. Okay, everybody, let's dive into what's going on over the sea. It's now been a couple of months since Vladimir Putin announced his draft. It's a draft, he calls it a mobilization. It's a national draft. They're drafting hundreds of thousands of people to throw them into a meat grinder in Ukraine so that he can get prestige or something. The Russian people get literally nothing, but Vladimir Putin sees some sort of gain in it. And you're probably wondering, well, how is that going? Well, here's how it's going. On Friday, he announced that 16,000 recruits have already been deployed to combat units. So they're fighting in Ukraine right now. Some had as few as 5 to 10 days of training, which is probably enough. I'm not an expert, but that's probably enough to fight a war. So they're already at the front and they're already dying, to be clear. One conscript who was interviewed was asked about his shooting practice. He said once, 3 magazines. He shot 3 magazines and that was his training to go to war. Other men are observed as having no machine guns, nothing, no clothes, no shoes. Half of them are hungover, old, at risk. The ambulance should be on duty. In one video that went viral, a recruit from Moscow assigned to the 1st Tank Regiment said that the regimental commander had announced that there would be no shooting practice or even theoretical training before the men deployed. And elsewhere, scores of soldiers ready to be sent to the front had people passing things through a fence to them. Boots, berets, bulletproof vests, backpacks, sleeping bags, camping mats, medicine, bandages, and food, because it is not being provided to them by the actual military. And so if you're wondering, well, wait, that seems like a recipe for a whole lot of these recruits to be killed in Ukraine. Yes. That is what is going to happen. It is needless. It is awful. Every single one of those deaths, there is no reason that it needs to happen. They can and should leave right now. If not today, tomorrow would be a great day too. You could just get out of Ukraine, but Vladimir Putin is not allowing them to. And we've got even worse information about how they're getting some of these soldiers. But Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that this should naturally show that Vladimir Putin and his regime are at a weak point here, because the whole point of this special military operation, as they were trying to call it internally, was that it wasn't going to affect the lives of regular Russian people. It wasn't going to affect the economy, even though there were worldwide sanctions going on, and that it would be over in a couple months. None of those things are happening. And now you're having it affect people at the most that it can, where you're having people, like, apparently we're getting reports of the Russian police pulling people out of apartment buildings, coffee shops, just pulling them into conscription.
Homeless shelters.
Homeless shelters. Gangs.
It's old school press gangs. They're going around to places where they think these are undesirables that nobody's gonna miss, and they're taking them and they're forcing, they're conscripting people into the military against their will. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah. The issue in the beginning of this invasion was that the people who were part of the Russian military, who theoretically had more than 3 magazines in a week of training, were already getting slaughtered by the Ukrainian military. So, like, by sending even less prepared troops with even fewer weapons and even fewer defenses, I mean, it's like the Starship Troopersification of the Russian military operation. Like, it's just like one of those war movies in the first 20 minutes where the first wave of people get killed. But, like, in reality, like, I think of this in an international, like, solidarity kind of sense. Like, these are just regular people, often working class, who are just tossed into this condition to die because of their dictator's ego issue. I despise that. I hate that.
Yeah. Yeah. We hated, like, in the run up to Iraq and Afghanistan, we hated, like, that the media would always present, like, what the regime wanted you to believe and encourage people to enlist for that reason. We hate the military recruiters who go to schools and, you know, try to get people to go to the military. We don't like that sort of pressure. But let's keep in mind, this is way, way, way worse. They are literally just going in and taking, they went to the dormitories for a construction company. They rounded up more than 200 men and they're just sending them to the front to die. These are not vets. These are people who are supposed to be doing drywall, and they are going to be going up against Ukrainian tanks soon. This is awful. I hate the deaths of the Ukrainian civilians and the fact that Russia just launched a series of dozens of Iranian-made kamikaze drones, just explosives that fly and just go and fly into something. That's terrible. But I also don't want these Russian soldiers to leave or to lose their lives needlessly in a war that they have no interest in. And I know that these people have no interest in it because so many people are desperately trying to get out of that country. Anyway, we'll have more to say about this in the future. We just wanted to give you an update on the recruitment, but let's launch into our last topic for the hour. We've all experienced road rage, but this is one of the worst, most tragic instances of it that I can think of. Two fathers in separate cars began shooting at each other's cars while driving, and they ended up being fine. But both of their daughters in the respective cars ended up getting shot because of what they did. This is William Hale and Frank Allison. It happened near Jacksonville, shockingly. There are the two men that decided to do this. The details of how it started is pretty much exactly what you would think. They were driving, they started to brake check each other. It's described as a cat and mouse game. Someone flipped the other person off, then someone threw a water bottle. Then one of them decided, oh, I have a gun right here, so why don't I just murder someone? Picked up the gun, fired at the car, and hit this guy's 5-year-old daughter in the leg. So then that father, who also drives with a gun within arm's reach, picked up his gun and fired apparently everything that was in the clip at the other car, hitting a 14-year-old daughter in the back seat. She has a collapsed lung as a result of it. And so again, guns make everyone safer, except that if you have a gun, you can start shooting at another car and a little girl gets shot. By the way, they didn't learn anything from this. Once they stopped, they continued fighting with each other. And now two girls have been shot completely needlessly. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, so the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. So that's why more people should get more guns. And if the good guys with the guns technically become bad guys with guns, then we just have more guns in our society, which just means we just have more crossfire, right? Mm-hmm. Like that just seems like the ultimate end is that, okay, if we're giving the good guys guns and the bad guys guns, and we're not always wearing good guy, bad guy shirts when we walk out of the house every single morning, then there's just going to be more crossfire. And that is American society. The fact that neither dad here was like, huh, I'm driving my daughter. Maybe I'm just not gonna road rage. Like maybe nothing I'm doing right now, like no destination I'm hitting at, I can be 1 or 2 or 5 minutes late to it. It doesn't justify getting into a road rage incident that endangers the life of my daughter. Not only did one person in the situation not think about that, both people did. And this is like, unfortunately, this is a situation that has happened, but this is a microcosm of American society. I know for a fact this happens over in California too, with parents shooting at each other's cars with kids in them on the freeway. This is a ridiculous society we have in this country. And this is part of gun culture that we need to start curbing.
I don't know if either of them at the time thought that they were the good guy with the gun. I don't know if in this case, the good guy with the gun is supposed to be a third person in a third car who's supposed to see two people shooting each other and then he's supposed to kill both of them. I don't know exactly how that's supposed to work. I know that going into this day, both of those men thought they were responsible gun owners. I know both of them thought that when they bought their guns, they were making themselves and their family more safe. But I will remind you, as I always do, when a gun is nearby, everyone is less safe. It is way, way easier to escalate to lethal violence when you have a gun. Those guys were not gonna get out of their car without guns and then literally rip each other apart with their bare hands. That was never going to happen. Once they had the gun though, they get to make the casual decision to escalate everything to lethal force, where they're willing to kill a random person in another car, even though they're firing through their car. The girl is right there seeing her dad doing this, knowing that they could miss and they could hit someone else in another car and kill them. This is the power of a gun. It makes guys like this think, I'm God now, I get to determine who lives and dies. I don't have to make any of the same rational risk calculuses that everyone else does at every moment of every day. I'm now God and I decide who lives and who dies. Now, thankfully in this case, neither of the girls are dead yet. Their lives are irreparably changed. They're never going to forget this, obviously. But thankfully in this particular case, these psychos didn't actually kill anyone. Anyway, that is going to be all the time we have for this segment. I actually lost, oh, there we go. Okay, we got more coming up in the aftermath, everybody. So don't go anywhere, we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.